Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is my co-host, Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. How's it going, man?
I don't know, man. How's it going? You're giving me weird vibes.
I felt my eyebrow twitch there.
Yeah, your eyebrow.
That was just like involuntary. Maybe a little too much caffeine.
Can you raise one eyebrow?
Of course.
I don't know if I...
Dude, you got to work on that.
I know. I'm not good at it.
I wish there was a camera. That's sad.
I think that's one of those. Is that one of those like genetic things? Like, you know, if you can roll your tongue into a hot dog
is.
or the hot dog bun or the like whatever the wave.
It probably is. I don't know.
Or double jointed.
Someone should
thumbs.
Write in and let us know that knows the answer to that.
Well, yeah, like double jointed thumbs.
Everyone's doing that right
it's
now.
Like
they're like listening to us raising their eyebrows. Can I raise one?
Can
eyebrow?
I do that? Can I? What are other things? Wink. Some people can't wink.
Yeah.
It's like stupid human tricks.
We're like demonstrating how to have meaningful conversations.
That's right. That's exactly what we are doing right now is this. I mean, that would definitely change the script.
Uh-huh.
I don't know anybody who after church is like, all right, can you raise one eyebrow?
Yeah.
Can you spread your toes? Like these are just like the different weird genetic things that uh-huh. some people can do and some people can't.
They are a fun part about knowing each other though.
Are they? Is that really a
thing? Now that I know that about you, I won't ever use it in another conversation, I promise.
No, what about me?
That you part? Can't raise your eyebrows one at a time.
Yeah, I didn't ever know I couldn't.
I feel like that's going to be useful.
What? Snapping. Snapping's another thing.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Some people, I mean, can you snap?
Yeah.
Can you snap equally well with both hands?
No, not quite.
And
pretty
in the
close.
Same way. Like a lot of times people snap in a different way.
Just give me some time. I'll work on it.
I don't know. Or the dividing fingers. This is the first half of this is just stupid human tricks. We should do that sometime.
We just really need to be on video so they can see it.
I know. That would be way better.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. All right. We're going to start a video podcast. Well, let's not do that. Let's not do that today. Let's talk about
our fourth practice.
Yeah. Which was, like you said, we were modeling it.
I was just going to, I'm pulling up the website here.
Pulling up the website?
Yeah, I like to have it in front of me. So we've got, just in case people didn't remember this, if you go to our website, you can click on the top banner and pull up the different spiritual practices that we've been walking through, which I think is sweet. I like how we have it on there. It's helpful.
That is great. Look at us. So one thing I will let people know, if you had any trouble signing up for the Dwell app, make sure you let us know. We know that if you already had an account, there is a way to merge your existing account with the church's, and I forget how to do that, but there is a way to do that. You
yes.
could probably Google it or whatever, but it's not immediately obvious. I think you have to go into your account or something. I don't.
Yeah, you should not have to. So if you get prompted for like some recurring billing or something, that means that the path is not, that's not, that should not happen for
yes.
what we have set up. So no. if you have that, I would just say call the office if you need help with that, or on a Sunday we can help you. The people I've helped, that's what the issue was. Like they already had an account, mm-hmm. so it wasn't clear, but you can link it. You're right. And eventually if you have it set up, how we mean for it to be set up, you'll see actually Faith Church in the app. Like you can see our name in there.
Okay, so if you don't see that, then make sure you talk to Jeff Bauer or Jeff Clossy or somebody, and we can help you get it figured out. I've heard from several people how much they've enjoyed that app and just listening to scripture and how that's kind of opened up some avenues for them, both in like new ways of this they never thought about listening, and then other people who have struggled reading, and it, like, I think some people just needed permission to listen that's okay.
Yes.
Cause we just are in such a read heavy society that we forget that, well, actually most of our day is spent listening, not reading.
It is. And I agree with you, by the way. I had apparently downloaded the app at one point, but I never really used it because I think I didn't have the paid subscription that I needed, but I have really been enjoying it. So just to be clear too about the Faith Church part, like on an iPhone, I don't know what it looks like on Android, but there are four buttons at the bottom. And if you click the one that says me, then I can see after I click that, I can see Faith Church is listed. And that's important because we would like to be able to use this year to even give suggestions on what to read or
yes.
if we're going through something together. So you'll be able to find that there, which is really neat. So we can together be in this.
Yeah. Now we don't have an app. We should have made an app to help people have the make these connections, like the community practice. Should have been like, here are the questions.
Yeah, then, we could just make note cards.
Yeah, we could. Here you go. Oh, we could have made like little
don't talk about your eyebrows.
Little laminated
step one.
That feels like a shot at me. Like I need to.
I think we were both in on that, Jay.
Oh, okay. But anyway, yeah. So I'm curious. I have a question right off the bat, since you're not helping this conversation go in a positive direction. I got a question for you. You look so indignant right there. I wish we had video video of this. Why do you think? So I'll be honest. Like whenever I preach messages like this that are around specific practices, I definitely have that feeling in me because of the way I was trained to preach. And I was trained in a camp that is going to be heavier in biblical exegesis for a sermon and theological, like heavy theological messages. So there's always a part of me when I preach sermons like this where I feel like, oh man, is this, you know, deep enough? Is it like there's just all these questions that come into my mind, and they always get like the most positive feedback. Mm-hmm. And they're the sermons that people years down the road will call back to and say, you know, like, I still remember that. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that either, like, you can psychoanalyze me on like, why do you think, here's your shot, Jeff, take your shot. Why do you think we have that pressure to feel like, oh no, like what is it in us that feels like we can't just do a sermon about praying the Lord's Prayer or just listening to scripture for 5 minutes? Like that's not a real meaty sermon. What's off in our understanding of what makes for a meaty sermon, right? And then why are these so impactful?
Man, I want to hear what you think about that. But there's so many places my mind just went. I mean, I do think part of the reason is, so if you just, I'm not saying anyone specific, by the way, or even a specific congregation in my mind when I answer this. This is general. But if you ask people, like, how was worship Sunday morning? Like, how did it go at church? Many people have been trained to think of, what new thing did I learn in the sermon that I took from it? Or was I, sometimes it's not even that. Sometimes it's like, just, did I like it? Did I walk away feeling a certain thing from the sermon? And I think if that's the lens through which you like filter sermons, whether or not they're good or not, a real practical one like this can feel like, well, there was nothing new. I knew I should pray, or I knew I should connect with people, or I knew, you know. So I think that's part of it, maybe. It's like that gets at a bit of a heart that I think we both can be kind of, we do that, but we also have been trained over time to think that way, you know. Because often what's held up as maturity in the church, again, I'm thinking broadly here, is the person who knows things that someone else doesn't know and can tell you those things. So that person is kind of like the pinnacle of spiritual maturity. But I think we all know in life, like, just because you know a thing doesn't mean it's real in your life or that you can live it out, especially when it comes to following Jesus. That's the other side of it. That's why I think people really love them. That's why I think that they really activate something in us. Because we have a sense that, like, following Jesus is not just an intellectual exercise. It is meant to be active. It's meant to be something that's real in our life, in which God is really present and we're walking with him. And to me, when we talk, I do think, I mean, if what people like is exegetical preaching, I think actually that's what this is, and it goes deeper than what we often go with exegetical preaching. It gets down to, like, what would this actually look like to do this? So, like, even the one you just gave on community and the importance of connecting with others, you could have spent lots of time talking about the nature of God and how he made us, but we just did that in Genesis. And to me, that this is the outflow of, like, clearly we were made for community if we are meant to image the triune God who is community, right? And he made us for that. So I think sometimes it's just that our exegetical preaching hasn't gone far enough to activate, like, what does this mean for our life? What do you think? I mean, that's just a couple of thoughts that I have, but
I mean, I love that. I think is so true. That reminds me of when people will get caught into simplistic black and white interpretations sometimes of scripture, and they then take their interpretation and say, well, I take the Bible seriously because I believe this is black and white, as opposed to saying like, well, actually, if you take the Bible seriously, you would know this isn't black and white. Like, this is heavily nuanced, and this is a very contextual thing that we have to figure out. So it's not, so you can't just say, well, I take the Bible more seriously because of that. And I think exegetical preaching is similar, that you'd say, oh, well, exegetical preaching, it can be reduced to what's all the information I should know about this. And so you dig into the Greek, or you dig into whatever. And that is, but you're actually in a true exegetical sermon in a way that's faithful, is like, this was intended to bear fruit in people's lives. So like, Paul didn't write Romans primarily so that they would just have these theological points down about justification by faith. It's because you believe these things, like, this is what your life, then what would your life look like? And so I agree that, I love the idea of saying, okay, yeah, this was a continuation, because this is what it is. Like, I looked at the message I just preached on, and it was December 21st on reconciliation with one another and the importance of community. And that was much more theological, flowing out of God's image and as image bearers, and then also like trying to combat the sin that so easily poisons the well of those relationships. Like, what part of the fall specifically is creating this hindrance? But then this was saying, okay, well then, We get that, and so we want to fight against sin, but that in and of itself doesn't actually restore the relationships. The only way to restore those relationships and experience that kind of community is to practice it, to practice being to practice being brothers and sisters in Christ, which means we are bonded around Christ, which means we're unified around Christ, which means we connect around Christ. That's what we have. That's what we have in common. And I think that we just, so often people are left with, okay, but how do I live that out? Like, we'll say, for example, faith is demonstrated belief. So faith is not just believing the right things about God. You show whether you believe these things by how you live. If you believe that God is sovereign, then that affects the way that you live. If you believe that Jesus, instructed us how to live, or if you believe that he is the exact imprint of the nature of God and that he is the picture of true humanity, then you would model your life after him. If you believe that there are actually treasures in heaven and that those are worth more than treasures on earth, that will bear out in your life through generosity. And so if it doesn't, then you can say you believe whatever you want to say you believe, but the way the Bible talks about faith is not just, I intellectually agree with these statements. It's no, then this actually, it's fleshed out in my life. And we know that by other things. Like, I can say I love my wife, but if my life doesn't look like that, then whatever I think I mean by I love my wife, it's not what most people would think you mean by it. Does that make sense? I think that that's part of it, is we redefine terms in our mind. And so we say, no, I believe that. Just like a person can say, no, I love my wife, and then not respond, not act in a way that is loving. And so I think that the reason why ultimately the practical sermons like this are so helpful is because it gives some handholds. It gives some things to grab onto to say, okay, this is a practice that does a couple of things. One, it's a litmus test. Like, do I think that, prayer is really that important? Well, here's a way to do that. And, And so sometimes it reveals, oh, I don't think I do actually value. Like, so somebody might say after this message, everybody says they want community. Nobody says, I mean, I guess there are some people who just want to be completely left alone, but most people would say, yeah, I would like to have friends. Well, if you're not willing to pause for 5 minutes to talk to a brother or sister in Christ about what God is doing and about at least some level of condition of your heart, you don't have to confess your deepest, darkest secrets, but it's not like I have no problem saying to somebody, hey, I'm feeling anxious this week. I don't have to tell them all the reasons why. I don't have to tell them everything that's going on. I don't have to confess all that in the Walmart aisle at all, but I can go there. And if I'm not willing to connect or engage at that level, then I have to ask the question of like, do I really want what I say that I want?
Yeah, that's good. It's interesting. I'm just thinking about the, like these practices and these types of sermons, they activate the real life component where it gets out of our head into what we're doing. And it makes me think, it's interesting that Jesus, his call was follow me, which is very active. It wasn't think about me. And I do think that unfortunately, sometimes our discipleship to Jesus can be much more think about me kind of emphasis. Just think about me. But really, it's meant to be active in our life. And I think people want that and they're excited about that. And to me, it reflects what he's put in us. You know, like we want, I believe when you see Jesus for who he is, you will want to follow him and imitate him. And these are just practical ways of doing that, living out what he made us for in our everyday life.
The image that just popped in my mind was you and I both coached youth sports a lot. And we have both said that a frustration that you see in youth sports and coaching, and I've experienced this more. You probably haven't because you're better.
Here we go.
You're better. You are a better teacher than me. But sorry. So the scenario where a coach is yelling at a group of 12-year-olds to, like, say in basketball, it's a classic thing of like box out. Like, get a rebound, and just you're yelling at these kids, just do this thing. And I always want to know, like, well, did you practice that? Did you teach them how to do it? Or do you just in practice yell at them to do this thing? And if you ask a kid, well, do you know how to box out? They'll say yes. But if you don't actually show them how to do it and have them practice it over and over again, there are so many things that we just think we know. But if you just ask the question of like, okay, well then how would you teach that to a child? We're at a loss. Like everyone, every Christian I've ever known said, like, if I say, do you understand the gospel? Yes. Okay. Tell me. And how does it come to fruition in this person's life in this situation? What does the gospel have to say about this broken relationship or this illness? Like, how does it? And then you're like, I don't know. What does it mean? Like we say, well, you need to abide in Jesus. I feel that weight as a pastor. So we keep telling people, abide in Jesus, abide in Jesus. Well, when somebody says to me, what does that mean? I have to face the reality of, okay, well, if I'm not helping you understand what that means and then actually giving you essentially drills to practice, I mean, that's what Jesus is doing. You could argue is he's preparing them all the way through real situations so that when Peter is faced with Gentiles at his door and he's going, wait a second, these guys aren't clean. You think that it didn't come into his mind at all the times Jesus interacted with the Samaritan woman or with the leper or with, like, you know, all of these times, you think that didn't go, oh, because Jesus is showing and then giving them opportunities to do it and then getting feedback and then he teaches them. So I think that I just feel like over the years, I have been guilty of just assuming a lot. And you know what that does is it covers up my own assumptions in my own life, because pretty soon it's like, well, do I even know how to do that? Because I'm spending all my time thinking about how are we supposed to think about this? That am I thinking hard about, like, how do we how do we do this together? And then of course you can fall into the other ditch of like, well, then it just becomes about what we're doing together and you forget why. Like mm-hmm. these things are held in tension all the time. Jesus doesn't just say, hey, go do these things. Follow me and just do these things. He also says, this is why I've come. This is why I'm doing this. This is why, this is who God is. This is who the Father is. This is what a relationship is. So it's both
together. It is. Yeah, you cannot separate them. It is interesting though, when you have a clear picture of where you're headed or who you're trying to become, it becomes really clear, I think. So like a soccer analogy here. So bear with me if you haven't played, but just imagine this happened last year with our middle school team. So the other coach that coached with me is an amazing, skilled soccer player. He can do things with the ball that you see if you're a soccer player and you're like, what did you just do? So over and over again, this would happen in a practice. He would do a crazy thing with the ball, like juggling it with his feet and things. And the players on the team would see that and they would think to themselves, I want to be able to do that as a soccer player. I want that. So then they ask the coach, how do you do that? And the first thing he does is not the thing he just did. It's very basic. It's like you drop the ball and you kick it once. And then you drop the ball and you kick it once over and over and over again, and you build. But they were motivated to do it because they saw where it was leading. And I think that's where like our picture of Jesus is so important. That's why we need to be consumed by the images that we see throughout the scriptures of who he is and what his life was like. Because the more we see him as someone like he is, this is the reality that we want to be like, that he lived the fully alive, truly human life that we were made for, the more we would be asking, how do I get there with his help? Like, what do I do? What is next? And I think this activates some of that. It's not mechanical. Like we've talked about that. It's not just do these five things and then this will happen, but it's by these things that we position ourselves for growth and change through God's grace and his spirit in us. And I do think like the kids show that in that illustration, they're just excited. So it makes sense that they would say, give me the next thing to do that. I want to be able to do that with the ball like you did. And obviously Jesus's way, that's why I think in our mind, we have to be clear. If you're going to be his disciple, where does it lead? What is he training you in? So he's not training you to play soccer, obviously. What is he actually leading you towards? And what did he do in his life? And when that picture becomes more and more clear, it's a process, right? It's like you practice and then you grow and you learn more and more what he's leading you towards. But that helps. It becomes very natural to say, help me, Jesus, help me become like you. And really with these practices, these ones are so obvious in his life. Like if you just read a gospel, you will see him doing this. It's how he connected with his Father in heaven as well. So we're just saying, we see Jesus doing this and let's do this. Even if we don't fully understand why or how it will help, because we don't. I mean, none of us do.
Now, why do you think, so this one was interesting because, you know, when I think about prayer, we've said before, everybody says, I know I need to pray more or I need more help with prayer. And I think people even get excited about getting a tool for that. Lots of people say, I need to connect more. I need to engage more with scripture. And so they get excited about that kind of tool. Why do you think, here's what I think is different. I'll tell you what I think is different about the community one. And I'm just curious, like what your thoughts are on this. I think the community one is different because unlike the others, this one feels like it's more tempting for us to say it's other people's fault.
Oh yeah.
Like there aren't too many people who blame me for their lack of prayer life. I can't think of too many situations where someone has done that or blame others for their lack of scripture. You know, they don't say like, well, if you just chose a more translatable version, like I just don't read this one well, or we need a different translation or whatever. I don't get that. But community, we get that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that it's not about what I'm doing? It's the other people. It's how other people are interacting with me. Either they're not welcoming me, or they're not talking to me, or they're not. And I didn't deal with that in the message. But I'm curious what you think. Why is that one different?
Yeah, it is different too. As you're describing that, I'm feeling that reality even in my own life. Right. I mean, I guess my first gut reaction to that is it's just harder, because when we come to like a practice that we can do on our own, so like listening to scripture, we do have to deal with our own sin and our own brokenness, and that's a reality in it. When we come to community, we deal with our own stuff, and then I have to deal with your stuff and his stuff, and then, you know, all the different people. Like, I think that's part of it. Like, it's weird. Like, community, if you get a taste of how beautiful it can be, even through the brokenness of it, you want more of it. But I think it also requires, it requires the most trust and obedience for many people. I guess there's exceptions. I shouldn't say it so broadly, but I think for many of us, when it comes to community, there's way less that we control. And we struggle with that, right? Like, I can't predict how a person's going to respond to me if I try to have a conversation that goes beyond the Packers, right? I can't. They might think that's foolish, or they might not respond, and then I don't know what to do. And so I think there's something about community that activates our fears and our loves in a way that maybe the other ones, they do activate it, but differently. What would you say?
Well, I don't know. That's why I asked you, because I think... No, I think one, it exposes just the reality of our situations, that we want to always be quick to deflect responsibility for things. And so, like you said, I think that's a really good point, that I don't have anybody else to blame for the fact that I'm not reading my Bible, really. Like, I can. People blame, like, environmental circumstances or whatever. Even then, we try to do that. But with community, yeah, it's like I can feel better about myself and saying, like, well, I want to, but the problem is, you know, this group is clicky, or, you know, nobody wants to connect with me, or whatever the case is. And I think it's because it's vulnerable. Like, we just don't like to be, it's scary to be vulnerable with other people. And obviously I think the answer to that is to be secure in Christ. Like, if you are secure in your relationship and your intimacy with Christ, then friendships around you are just, they're gifts, they're blessings, they're kind of, they're just beautiful gifts that we can enjoy, and they are in service of us both worshiping Christ, you know, and in being in that relationship. But I think we also tend to, like we do with, I guess we do this with all the disciplines, is we start to think that they're personality based.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize that it really doesn't matter what your wiring is. There are ways that the enemy perverts those things, and there are ways that they can be redeemed, and all personalities have strengths. And that's what I love about it. Is so a lot of people, sometimes people will say, well, I'm an introvert, so all of the communal things, like, that's not really my thing. Well, you'd have to then say that that Christianity is a faith for the extroverted because of how many one another's there are. But that's not true. Because if you think about what's the purpose of us connecting, it's to build one another up, exhort one another, encourage one another, confess our sins to one another, bear one another's burdens. Like, there's tangible substantive results of that relationship. It's not just like, it's actually, there's very few things about intimacy in that sense, because we're sharing the intimacy of Christ. So it's meant to stir us in our affections for Christ. That's what those relationships are meant to do. And if you think about different personality types, I don't know which personality type is the most challenging for that. So, for example, I'm a hyper extrovert. Well, that means part of it is I like to connect with a lot of different people. Well, guess what else that means? If I'm connecting with a lot of different people, how deep am I going with any of those people? My whole life, I have had a lot of friends, but very few, and sometimes in seasons of life, like none, no, like, deep friendships. Whereas a lot of the introverts I know, they're the ones that, like, in high school had like two or three great friends that they just spent a ton of time with. And maybe nobody else in your high school even knew who you were, but you had those deep friendships. Those are different challenges. So a person who likes to talk to a lot of different people tends to struggle with the commitment part that's required to go deeper with some people, right? So that's a challenge for them. An introvert has their own challenges of being willing to put themselves out there and say, this is worth, even though I know it's going to ultimately be draining from an energy standpoint, I know it's going to be good and build my soul up. And I'll be able to build up others as well. Another is some people are very transparent. They like to share. They have no problem sharing. They're an open book. And other people are very closed. And you might think like, oh, well, the people who are an open book, that's easier for them. Well, not exactly, because people who are an open book, their battle tends to be listening to other people. They're happy to share, but they're not always very good at receiving and like listening to other people share and digging into that. So I'm just saying giving those as a couple of examples that to not let us fall into the trap of saying, oh, well, I'm not wired for community. I'm not wired for those kinds of relationships. And so I'm exempted from that. I tried to use that as an example in the message where I said, you know, some of you, it's going to be 1 5-minute conversation. Here's what I'd almost guarantee. I actually saw a couple of people doing this and I awkwardly interrupted a couple of people doing the thing that I just asked them to do. And here I am thwarting it, which I thought was ironic. But my guess is that the people who actually did the practice on Sunday were probably people who are more wired as introverted and reserved. That's my guess. Because my guess is the people who are extroverted just went right back into their rhythms of like talking. Because what they hear is like, oh, connect with people after the service. And they go right back into their rhythms of how they connect with people and probably didn't stop and think about trying to flip the script. That's my guess. And as I bounced around and just kind of overheard, that's kind of the pattern I saw. I wouldn't say it's statistically significant where I could draw that conclusion, but anecdotally, the extroverted people just kind of jumped right back into their rhythms. And I saw introverted people intentionally say, you know what, I'm going to go and talk to this person and I'm going to ask them these questions. So I don't know.
Yeah, that is interesting. I think wiring, you know, whatever category we put it in, like personality or introvert extrovert, the wiring that we have does, I think, it impacts the way we end up practicing and why it really does. I was just searching here because as you were talking about that, I was thinking of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He wrote a book called Life Together. And he was a pastor during World War II who eventually was arrested, imprisoned by the Nazis and killed by them at the end of the war. But during that was happening, before he was arrested, he formed some communities and did a lot of research. And he had a unique life. He was able to travel the world and see how Christians did community. And then he wrote Life Together. But one of the things he said in there is that essentially let him who cannot be alone beware of community. But then he also said, let him who is not in community beware of being alone. Isn't that interesting? So it's kind of like it's both. We need both things. And the way I was thinking of it as you were saying that is the person that we are when we are alone and in private, thinking back to like Jesus talking about close your door when you pray, like this private prayer, the person we are when we're alone is the person we bring to the community. It's the person then that comes out when we're interacting with people. And that changes. I know for me, one of the ways that changes me when I'm in community, because I'm wired, whenever I take those tests, you know, like the, what kind of person are you? I'm always an E, extrovert. But I don't think I'm as like far on the E as you are, Jay. But for me, what I do in private, how it matters, how I interact is when I am connected with Jesus and abiding in him in my alone time, I am able to then go into a conversation that I love and enjoy with my focus being on the other person and not on me. Because part of being an extrovert is you just like the conversation and the interaction. And what your sermon made so clear on Sunday was that the point isn't just have a conversation. The point is know each other and love each other and care, right? And so that's where my, I guess my private practices, when I'm with Jesus alone, that transforms the way what I carry into a conversation. So if I haven't been, like I'm losing track of where I am with him in life, like I'm not connecting with him well, I'm not abiding. When I come to the conversation, I have a much higher tendency to make it about me. You know, someone tells a story and then I need to just like tell my story. You know, everyone knows what that feels like. And that happens. It's not like if you've had that happen recently, it's fine. But I guess my point is these things are alone and are together are related. They are part of a whole and we need both, no matter our wiring, you know. And I've had people in my life, like close family who are much more introverted. And I know for some of them, that has been a difficult thing. Like they're wired more introverted. And so they hear a sermon like that and they feel like, man, I can never do that. And that is not like what we're saying is what it will look like for that person. If you feel like, man, I get way more energy from a book alone than I ever do from people, you know, in a room. Well, we're not saying you have to change that, but what we are saying is you do need community. So it might look different for you than it does for someone who's like, I have 15 friends that I can't stop talking to all the time, you know, and the book is hard. So for the person who the book is more difficult, and I'm not talking about reading there, I'm just talking about being alone, solitude. That person needs to make sure they're getting solitude, just like the person who prefers solitude needs to make sure they're getting community. But the way both of them do it will be very different.
Yeah, that's, yes, that kind of intentionality. It's kind of like during the pandemic when everything was shut down and people were so worried about extroverts. And I was like, I'm not worried about extroverts because they will find a way to connect. It's the introverts who need that kind of help, you know, and we all need help for things. So I need to be reminded to take time to be quiet. And it takes practice. I mean, the thing is, part of what I was trying to say on Sunday was some of these rhythms, these become normal things. So just think for a second, how many places is it normal that you, like everybody sings together? Like there's not very many environments, like you're not in Walmart where all of a sudden everyone just breaks into song. I've had some friends where like if we would hang out, you know, certainly in college, you know, someone might break out a guitar and you'd sing some songs or whatever, but I would say that's not typical. I don't remember the last time I was just hanging out at somebody's house and we just, you know, broke out instruments and started playing. Well, actually, I do remember that, but it was unique, right? So, but it's so normal when we come here on Sunday morning. Like nobody, we don't have to go like, wait a second, we're going to sing. It's so normal that we just like all jump in. So what part of what I want to make clear with all these habits is once everything feels weird until it becomes normal, the question is, what are we going to allow to become normal? So much of what the New Testament does when it's warning against sin, it's warning against like, this is becoming normal. Like you're approving of this. This is like, you're even bragging that you do this. Like he says to the church in Corinth, it's you just don't like that needs to not become normal. And our patterns become normal. And once something becomes normal, it becomes kind of second nature. And the question is, well, do we want practices like when anytime a couple learns to pray together, it's awkward. Like if you're married and you've never prayed with your spouse, like if you don't do that very often, it's awkward. If you don't have spiritual conversations with your kids or with your family or with your friends or with your coworkers, it's awkward. You feel really awkward. But once that becomes normal, I think all of us probably have examples of a coworker, a friend, a neighbor, where you just happen to have spiritual conversations with them. Because for whatever reason, that was the culture that was set. And now that's normal. It's not weird. And that's kind of what I want to have happen is say, just like singing is normal and like us taking communion together is normal. And for crying out loud in our culture, for people to just sit and listen to someone talk for 45 minutes is not normal anywhere else, but it's normal for us on Sunday morning because it's become normal. And I think there's some people who say that maybe that shouldn't be so normal. And like, that's fine. Fair point. I don't think I'd even argue with you about that. But we get to determine what's normal, and we get to determine, okay, so then let's let the habits and patterns of Jesus be normal. And that's kind of the vision that I was trying to cast on. Imagine if on Sunday morning, we together can make it normal that when you're here, people ask you, where do you see God working? And how's your heart? And I get like, maybe there's a different way of phrasing that for some people. Like, hey, well, how do you feel about that? Someone tells you what's going on at work or what's going on in their life, and you just say like, how do you feel about that? That's another way of just kind of getting at the heart level of, I'm interested in the nuts and bolts of what's happening, but what's a bigger concern for me, or what I'm more curious about, is how are you responding to that?
Yeah. I was thinking that, you know, depending on, you know, how emotional you tend to have in conversations, like you need to say it how it fits for you. Like you could also say, how are you doing in the midst of that? Mm. How are you in that? Because that's getting at that too. So what Jay is saying, and I love that question, is it gets you beyond talking merely about circumstances are important. And I want to know, like for my friends, I want to know what's going on in their life. But then what I really want to know is, how are you in the midst of those circumstances? I don't want to assume I know how you are in those, you know, and what's difficult about it? What are you finding that's most bringing agitation to your soul in the midst of that conflict or whatever, you know? Like there's a lot of ways of asking it. I kept thinking too, we've talked about this and how people change. One way that we can love each other is by serving as sort of a cardiologist, someone who's trying to focus on the heart in our life. And that just means drawing it out, right? Like helping a person express that and then being curious. And I think that really deepens relationships fast in a really beautiful way. When you start to, you know, entrust yourself to someone to tell them, this is how I am in the midst of that. This is how I was when that happened.
Yeah. And then I would say, I didn't say this in the sermon, but you don't have to be a heart surgeon then either.
Like
it's so helpful and so encouraging in my life when somebody just asks me, how am I doing in the midst of that? Or what am I feeling? And then if I say, oh, I'm anxious, I don't have to, like, I don't necessarily need a biblical lecture, or certainly don't need it to be dismissed of like, well, why are you worried? Don't be worried about anything. There are times where that's helpful if somebody doesn't know that, or to say, to empathize of like, I know how that feels. Man, isn't it incredible that like, we don't have to worry, but we do. And God understands us in that. But you know, there's ways of doing that. I always hate it when people have like the, social media will do like the 10 things you should never say to somebody, you know, in this situation. And I'm like, it's all about the heart. Like a love covers a multitude of sins. And there is definitely a way, like even when you said, when someone tells you a story or whatever, like don't make it about you. But there's a way in which if you tell me you're struggling with something and I say, man, I've also struggled with that, that's actually a really encouraging thing.
Yep.
So how do you make sure it's not about you? Well, here's just a quick little nugget tip. If someone's sharing something with you that you can relate to because you've been through something similar. Now, I'm not talking about you're trying to find something similar. Like you shouldn't feel the pressure to have to do that. I've used the example before of when my mom passed away and somebody said, I know what you mean. My dog just passed away. Like, I know what that feels like. And you're like, oh, that's not the same thing at all, nor is that helpful.
Yeah, that can be really hurtful.
It can be really hurtful. What you can say in that, and I used this example before, but what you can say is grief is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I'm not saying that losing a pet isn't painful. That's not the point. And you just don't want to be in comparison mode. So it's not about comparison. You can relate to the intangibles of, man, I know what that's like to be really confused at work or to feel like to feel unnoticed. I know what that feels like. But then the other way that you then can is turn it back to them with a question. So if you say, man, I'm really struggling, I'm really struggling financially. and I'm really worried about my finances. If I say to you, oh, I know what you mean. Like, you know, we thought we were going to be able to buy this brand new car, and now we had to buy a 2 year, you know, old car or whatever. Like, that's not going to be helpful, right? But you can say, man, financial troubles, like, they're finances can really cause stress. And like, I can relate to that. How are you dealing with it?
Yeah.
Like turn it back to the person quickly of like, cause you're communicating. I can relate to that feeling that you're feeling, like you're not crazy for feeling that way. And then you can go right back into their situation. That's just a practical tip. Cause I don't want us to get to a place where you say, okay, don't ever share about your own situation, or don't ever, like, no, that's part of the mutual vulnerability, is being willing to share. And a lot of encouragement can happen in that. But at the end of the day, if your heart is to be a blessing to them and love them and serve them well, and it's not about you being the one who fixed it, or you being the one who, like, how you're being seen, then you'll probably be okay.
Yeah. It goes back to what you think you're accomplishing by saying it and why you're doing it.
Right.
It's the function of the behavior, and that's the issue. So am I needing someone to affirm me right now? Am I needing someone to put their attention on me, or can I come alongside this person and show empathy or whatever? It's interesting. So the you're describing with that question, a way of getting at the heart. And I think for many people, that's going to be so refreshing to experience that, because you think about the other ways that people sometimes experience community, especially in the church. There's a way of experiencing community in which other people take sort of an enforcement role in your life. Like they're like a law enforcement. So they're telling you the rules you broke and what you did wrong in those conversations, say about money, right? And that's kind of the hat they put on. Now, there are times when that can be helpful. If you have a close friend and you've said, I want to stop this behavior, I want to start doing this good thing, I need you to ask me if I'm doing that. Okay, that's healthy. So there's that kind of role. There's also one where we take the role of, like, really quickly advice giver and like a coach. And there's also a place for that. There's a place for us to give someone help. So if someone says, I'm struggling with my finances, how do you do budgeting in your house? So they ask you that question, then they're giving you an open door to coach, to give some advice. But I think often our instincts in the church are to do those first two really quickly. So like, I'm going to be a law enforcement person, like a cop role in your life, or I'm going to be this coach in your life. And then unfortunately we miss that cardiologist slot of like, man, the first thing I need to know is how are you in the midst of this? Because you might not even want my advice. That might not be helpful right now. And I think we do it well-meaning. I'm not saying people are trying to be, you know, unhelpful, but that might not be the best place to start in a conversation. And it will, like, if you go to someone's heart in a healthy way, not a weird way, it will invite more conversation in a process of building a relationship over time. You become a person who can be entrusted with difficulties, and then they might ask you, how do I get out of this? I need some help.
That's exactly right. I mean, if almost without exception, a first conversation, no one wants advice or counsel unless they specifically are asking you for it, because they know, oh, you are, you know, like if someone comes up to Christoph and says, hey, do you have any tips for, you know, exercise, like where I would start if I wanted to like start exercising? That's a very specific question that they are asking. That's very different than if somebody is just saying, man, I've just been really tired this week. And Christoph just starts saying, well, hey, you should, you know, have you tried doing this? Have you tried doing this? That's not typically what people want. And you're right. You earn that trust and that place in people's lives by being willing to listen. And if you're unsure, I think sometimes people don't know how to ask for help, by the way. There are times I think we get into the most trouble when we feel like we have to have an answer, that we have to be able to solve it for them. And then that's when we start reaching for just spiritual platitudes and really unhelpful counsel. If your default is, all I'm going to do is I want to hear how your heart is, and then I want to take it to the Lord in prayer, that should be our default. If a person says something that is eerily similar to a situation that you have gone through and you think that that would be helpful, there are ways that you can broach that. I mean, one is you could say, you know, I've been through a pretty similar situation. If you want to talk about it at all more, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You just make that offer and then put the ball in their court and let them say, oh my gosh, that would be so great. Or, you know, no, I'm good. Okay. That's fine. So I think that can be a helpful thing. You can also just say, you can also ask, how can I help? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to pray about your heart. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else I can do to help? And they might say, you know, I just don't know where to start with this. And then that might open the door. I mean, yesterday I got a message from somebody and I wasn't sure what they were asking for. So I asked, I said, hey, I had all these different responses and I thought through all these different responses. And then I just thought, well, I don't know what they actually want. And so I said, hey, can you help me understand, like, how can I respond in a helpful way? And their response was, oh, I sent that to you by accident. Which I thought was the best thing ever. Because I'm like, holy cow, here I was like trying to figure out how do I help this, you know, how do I deal with this? How do I respond to this? How do I, you know, engage in this? And then it was like, oh, I wasn't even meant for me. Like, okay, well, easy enough. So I do think, like, as we kind of wrap this up, like, that's one, if I could add a point to the sermon, it would be that. It would be, let your posture be, and I tried to do this kind of indirectly, but I think it's a good help, is that your posture in hearing from your brothers and sisters is, the default should be, I just want to be the cardiologist and just see what's going on in your heart. And then my default plan is I'm just going to take that to the Lord in prayer. And then if something else comes up and you respond to the Spirit in a different way because something is obvious, well, then by all means, like, respond to the Spirit in that. Ask more questions or dig deeper if you feel, or test the waters or ask them how else you can be of help.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think for a lot of people, approaching a conversation from that posture will relieve some pressure that we can feel, that if we hear something isn't going well, like, I think we can feel a pressure to fix it for them. And I think, unfortunately, that can make us not as able to really listen and see people, because then we can become worried about our response, right? And what do I do? What's my responsibility? And I think if we can just slow it down a bit, and again, remember that we are doing all this in the presence of God, right? Who's all around us and inside of us. And he is at work in that conversation. Going to him is the most natural thing in the world to do. And I think hopefully that relieves the, well, what if a person does say their heart is struggling with this thing and they're actually struggling to trust God? What do I do? You know? And I do think those are valid concerns and they can prevent people from connecting that way. But if we can remember what our responsibility is before God in those moments is to walk with him and to be faithful to Jesus. And we want to reflect the image of God to each other. Right. And it's interesting to me that God, like throughout the Gospels, especially you see Jesus, God in the flesh, he doesn't ever force his ways on people. He invites them into it. And that's why I love those questions you just gave. You're inviting someone, if you'd like to talk more about it, I'd love to, you know, or I'd be happy to, but it's not a forcing. And hopefully that just gives us some more, I guess, creativity with how we approach that, you know, different posture.
Right. That posture of, you know, like, not, it's not about me. It's about connecting with that person and being a blessing to them. And then they will likely return that and give you that opportunity. But yeah, I love the ability to, by the way, you can always come back. It's not, you don't have to have the perfect thing to say in the moment, and you might just like sit on it. There have definitely been times where I'm like, I feel like maybe I should say this, but I'm not, maybe not. And then I just wait. And then a few days later, I might follow up with them and say, hey, how are you doing with that? And then make an offer of help, you know. But whatever you do, like, just again the reminder that God is with you and the Spirit is with you. And so you don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to, you definitely, we don't have to fix things. God is the one who fixes things. We don't have to, have the perfect thing to say. We just need to love one another. And I love what you said earlier. And I think this is a great place to kind of wrap it up, that if we are interacting with people out of the overflow of our abiding in Jesus, then we will be able to discern what is good and right. So if we are filled up by Christ and then we are focused on loving others, then a lot of it will become even more natural. And the more you do that, the more natural that kind of response becomes. And obviously we want to help you do that. We want to help you get connected and be able to have these kinds of conversations. But hopefully, like, through this, we realize too that at the end of the day, we have to be obedient and walk in obedience and get through some of those fears and concerns that we have about it, and being willing to just trust Jesus in that and trust others and see where it goes. As always, if you have questions or thoughts about this, you can talk to any of us or email at connect@faithpeshtigo.com. We hope that this has been helpful. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. And until next time, grace and peace.